Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Alan Lopez. I represent the health plan of the Upper Ohio Valley. And with me today is General Counsel for the health plan, Mr. Bob Cota. We're here today because the district court held that the health plan faulted in its right to enforce an arbitration clause and that the enforcement of that right would prejudice the hospitals. I'll note initially that there is a strong federal policy in favor of arbitration. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that enforcement of an arbitration agreement is not discretionary. Arbitration agreements between sophisticated parties are enforceable according to their terms as written in the contract. The Fourth Circuit has quoted the Supreme Court in Patton, stating that the federal policy favors arbitration, and any doubts concerning the scope of arbitrable issues should be resolved in favor of arbitration, whether the problem at hand is the construction of the contract language and whether arbitration should apply, or whether there's an allegation that the right to arbitration has been waived or is in default.
Are you going to talk at all about whether or not we have jurisdiction to hear this appeal?
I can certainly address that, Your Honor.
Well, you don't have to. I just was curious. It would seem to be a rather threshold issue.
Sure, sure. And I do intend to touch on that. As I stated, it is possible to default on your right to arbitration. A party can lose its right to enforce an arbitration agreement if it's in default with such an arbitration, and that's the Forrester case in the Fourth Circuit. Default is similar to waiver, but due to the strong policy favoring arbitration, a default can only occur in certain circumstances. The Patent Grading Court addressed this, and they stated that a party only defaults if it so substantially uses the litigation machinery that allowing arbitration would actually prejudice the opposing party. Stated another way by the Fourth Circuit in other cases, a default occurs when a party has acted inconsistently with the arbitration right and such conduct has actually prejudiced the opposing party.
How do you count the two dispositive motions that the district court found had to be responded to? The district court didn't specify. How do you count those two motions?
Those are two factors that will weigh into the court's consideration of whether actual prejudice occurred. The facts of those, the first dispositive motion, as the court knows, there were several plaintiffs. This is a putative class action case. There were eight named plaintiffs, at least initially. Two of the named plaintiffs are a subject of this appeal. The two hospital plaintiffs, Wheeling Hospital and Belmont Hospital. The remaining named plaintiffs do not have arbitration agreements in their agreements with the health plan. And so other defendants, the Ohio Valley defendants, that's Ohio Valley Medical Center and East Ohio Regional Hospital, filed motions to dismiss, and the health plan joined in those motions. That was the initial motion to dismiss that the court had to entertain. Subsequent to that, after the remaining defendants were dismissed and the health plan was not dismissed, the plaintiffs then filed an amended complaint in January of 2011, I believe, adding plaintiffs, essentially, adding additional plaintiffs. In response, 3 days after the filing of the amended complaint, the health plan then filed their motion to dismiss. With respect to the hospital plaintiffs, the motion to dismiss was asking the court to compel arbitration. And that's what the district court found. Although it was characterized as a motion to dismiss, the court found that this was essentially a motion to compel arbitration and treated it as such.
Why would the district court count that second motion as a dispositive motion when that is the motion seeking arbitration?
Well, in a sense, it was a motion, a dispositive motion, particularly with respect to the other parties, the non-hospital plaintiffs as
yes,
well.
But I guess point is, it does not appear to be fall into the category of utilizing the litigation machinery, since it's the purpose that it seeks to serve is to get the stay that you wanted for arbitration.
And of course, I agree with you, Judge Duncan. You know, part of my argument is that that motion was, in fact, the vehicle that we were using to compel arbitration, and it shouldn't be held against them, and it certainly shouldn't be counted as using the judicial machinery in litigation as opposed to arbitration.
And is there authority for that, that that is not a part? It seems intuitive that it would be.
I don't have authority where that specific vehicle was used. I agree. I think it is intuitive on its face, but I don't believe I know of a case where that has in fact happened. Judge, one factor that the courts will consider when trying to determine if there was actual prejudice is delay. Here we have about roughly a 6-month period from the time that the health plan filed an amended answer in which they stated an affirmative defense referring to arbitration and their actual attempt to have the case referred to arbitration. A party, it's clear in the Maxim Founds case, the Frazier case, the In Re Mercury Construction case, that a party does not waive its right to arbitration through delay alone. Courts can, of course, consider the extent of the delay in determining actual prejudice, however. Both sides have cited several cases, and there are many cases that talk about much, much longer delays of years, without determining actual prejudice occurred. Another factor that the court considers when they're considering whether there was a delay are settlement negotiations, and that's something that I think is important here. Here, the actual obligation to fund the payments wasn't the health plans. It was Ohio Valley Medical Center and East Ohio Regional Hospital. Because of financial difficulties, they were unable to meet those obligations, and it's the plaintiff's theory that that then falls on the health plan pursuant to the contract between
the health plan. Well, specifically, the district court found that the plan's filing of the dispositive motions, however you count them, forced the hospital plaintiffs to, quote, reveal their litigation strategy.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's
something that I disagree with.
Well, I expected you to, if you could elaborate as to why.
Sure. The theory of the plaintiffs has not been a mystery here. And it hasn't been a mystery since the first complaint and the amended complaint. They have been very open. Their pleading was very detailed as to their theory here. That nothing has been divulged in discovery since then or in responding to the, I'll just call them the motions to dismiss. They haven't divulged any legal theory or any strategy that wasn't either stated in their complaint or amended complaint or readily evident from those documents. I'd like to get back to the settlement negotiations because I think it's something that the court should consider when they're thinking about the delay, and that is in the time period before the district court filed decided the motion to dismiss, there were settlement negotiations going on. In fact, at one point prior to that ruling, there was a statement made by the parties that were to actually provide the money to actually fund the plan. And they said, we're going to get these things paid off. And I believe it was in 30 to 45 days. And the defendants asked the court for a stay. Based on that, the court declined to stay the proceedings. But at that point, with representations coming from essentially the funding party. I think it was unreasonable to expect the health plan to go ahead and rush to arbitration at that point. As far as whether the health plan substantially used the litigation machinery, here the hospitals brought the case. The hospitals brought the case in what we feel was the wrong forum, caused us to remove the case to federal court, and they've pointed out in their...
How are we supposed to take that motion? Instead of seeking arbitration in state court, which I assume you could have done, you instead said, no, we want to litigate in federal court. And then when things started not going your way, you lost a motion to dismiss, the case was moving forward, at that point, oops, let's arbitrate. That's problematic, don't you think?
Judge Diaz, I think it was the defendant's rights, the health plan's rights, to get into whatever forum they needed to get into, and if they wanted the federal court to entertain the arbitration motion or that decision, then I think it was their right to do so, and that was their choice. Rather than to take that motion to a state court, it was their right to go ahead and take that motion to the federal court.
Okay, then why not file the motion to demand arbitration right away instead of seeking to dismiss the case on the merits in federal court?
And again, Judge Diaz, they certainly could have. They certainly could have back in July, but the posture of the case, the hope that this plan was going to be funded and this was all going to be mooted was certainly part of that. As things dragged on and dragged on, I think all of us became a little less confident that the plan was going to be funded as quickly as we thought it was going to be. If I can point back to the use of the litigation machinery, I'd like to point out that the health plan responded to discovery, did not propound any discovery directed towards the hospitals. Courts and the Fourth Circuit have looked into that, those kind of considerations to see who was benefited. If the health plan had benefited from any perceived delay, then that might be held against them. But I'd submit that the health plan, having propounded no discovery, hasn't benefited from the litigation at all. In fact, I'd argue that hospitals, after having propounded and received responses to discovery, have actually benefited the litigation much more than the health plan.
So that would also be your response to the litigation strategy question?
It would, yes, Your Honor. In fact, I think the health plan is taking a calculated risk by asking to be referred to arbitration because there is no guarantee that they'll receive any discovery, let alone the unfettered discovery or the additional discovery that they might receive in the federal forum. And so, just to go ahead and skip ahead, I think the court has to look at all the facts and circumstances. There's no bright line test for the court to consider here. They have to decide whether there's been actual prejudice. The hospitals have not demonstrated actual prejudice. They haven't had to reveal their legal theories. They're not prejudiced by the health plan utilizing the litigation machinery. There's no duplication of efforts here. Again, it's important to note, and this kind of separates this case from others, we still have six other putative plaintiffs that don't have arbitration agreements here. So the money that's been expended to this point on the plaintiff's behalf would have to be expended regardless of whether these cases are split off and go to arbitration pursuant to the agreements. The other cases would still proceed. And I just end because my time is coming here. It is the hospital's burden here, and they have a heavy burden, according to the law, to prove default. Does the panel have any other questions at this point for me?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Valentino. Please, the court. Mark Colantonio. Judge Duncan, addressing the motion to dismiss very briefly, the position we have motion to dismiss is that jurisdiction is limited to a denial of a motion to compel arbitrate or a denial of a motion to stay the proceedings pending arbitration. The motion that was filed here was a motion to dismiss with prejudice.
So this goes to the appealability question.
That's correct, Your Honor. So briefly, that is the basis for our motion to dismiss. Is because the motion was styled as a motion to dismiss with prejudice and not a motion to either compel arbitration or to stay the proceedings pending arbitration, there is no jurisdiction. That's on the motion to dismiss. But I believe, Judge Diaz, you hit the central issue on this appeal, and that is, why are we here? I mean, what happened in this case is we represent several hospitals and doctors in the Northern Panhandle, West Virginia, that haven't been paid for their medical services.
Could I just clarify your answer on the first point? Because it was styled as a motion to dismiss with prejudice, it's the styling that's determinative?
And the relief sought. In other words, their motion was not a motion to compel arbitration or a motion to stay the case pending an arbitration. It was a motion to dismiss the case just because there's an arbitration clause with prejudice, dismiss the case with prejudice.
But weren't they seeking, I mean, if you look to what they're discussing, what they're saying is, we want to dismiss because there is an arbitration provision. It's not, you're absolutely right that it is inartfully worded and not entirely accurately styled. Is it your position that that's determinative?
No, in fact, Your Honor, I can understand. I looked at the court's order. The court, in fact, interpreted it as a motion for arbitration, so I can't argue with that. I mean, it's improperly styled, but the net effect was the court said, it's asking for arbitration. What the court did find is they defaulted on that right, and that gets to...
And that's that's where you mount the greater part of your challenge.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So why are we here? So this case is filed in state court. The defendants removed the case to federal court. They want to be in federal court. They want to be in front of this judge in federal court. We file a motion to remand. They resist the motion to remand. At that time, there's also a motion to dismiss the entire case filed, which they join in. The premise for the motion to dismiss, one of the premises for the motion to dismiss, is that there's another party responsible for paying these bills. And so what they did is they put the central issue in the case before the court on that motion, which is who's responsible to pay bills. We claim we have a direct contractual relationship with the health plan to pay these bills. And so that issue was put before the court on the first motion to dismiss. They lost that motion. Right after they lost that motion, they now want to go to arbitrate. And they want a second bite at the apple. That's our prejudice. So what happens here is the motion to dismiss is filed. We have oral argument on this motion to dismiss in October of 2010, and the transcript's in the appendix. And they filed this odd sort of joinder in the motion to dismiss, but at oral argument, they told the court that they're considering it a motion for judgment on the pleadings. And when we get to the argument where we're kind of distilling the arguments about what this part of the case is about, what the motion to dismiss is about, the health plan's lawyer says, if anything, I guess it would be a 12C, a motion for judgment on the pleadings, which could be filed any time as long as we're not past the deadline. And he says, again, it's our position that this contract with Wheeling Hospital did not require the health plan to fund these claims. On the contrary, the health plan cannot do that. So they placed at issue the central issue in the case, which is, are they contractually required to pay our bills? That's the whole case. This isn't some ancillary issue. That is the entire case. What happens is, and I what happened at that hearing is, both the Ohio Valley Medical Center, who was a defendant, who's supposed to fund these, and the health plan both stood up in front of the court and said, we're not responsible to pay. And I stood up in front of Judge Stamp. I said, we must have made a contract. We've got a contract, and Party A is saying they don't have to pay, and Party B is saying they don't have to pay.
And what specifically, please, is the prejudice?
The prejudice, Your Honor, is what the court did with that argument. The court then issues its order in This is December 2nd, 2010. After hearing the arguments, which places the issue of payment right at issue, and after having this motion to dismiss filed, which they joined in, and the court, throughout its order, says in the order, it says, as mentioned above, there's no reason for this court to interpret the employee benefit plans. The plaintiffs contracted for payment in the HSA with the health plan. It is the health plan's responsibility under the HSA, that's the contract, to pay the plaintiffs for any health care services provided to participants in the employee benefits plan. That's the case. He goes on to say, that's at page 24 of his opinion, that's appendix 430. He says at appendix 431, as the court has stated before, the claims here do not involve employee benefit plans. Therefore, it is not possible that there could be a double recovery against them or a risk of inconsistent obligations. As stated above, it is the health plan that is responsible for amounts owed for health care services rendered pursuant to the HSA. Again, central issue in the case. Then on, that's at page 431 of the appendix, and then on page 432 of the appendix, the court concludes, the health plan's alternative motion asked that this court dismiss it if the court granted OV Health System party's motion to dismiss. The health plan's alternative motion must be denied as it has a contractual obligation pursuant to the HSA to compensate the plaintiffs for the services provided to participants of the employee benefit plan.
Could I just go back to my question, though?
Yes.
As I understand it, the district court has to make a finding of actual prejudice.
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying... let me finish my question. Here, what the court talked about, and there is no question that the health plan engaged in pretrial, in some pretrial activity inconsistent with an intent to arbitrate. It joined in that dispositive motion, and during that argument stated to the district court that it had no obligation to make any payments. No question. So the district court, as I read it, said that the filing of, and it was really only one dispositive motion, forced the hospital plaintiffs to reveal its litigation strategy, which wasn't clear to me because they didn't propound any discovery. And it doesn't say that the court doesn't say what legal strategy they was revealed. And then you have the legal fees and expenses against all defendants, but there's no breaking down, there's no allocation of costs as to the amount spent by the hospital plaintiffs or anything, or there's no breakdown of that. So it seems to me that with respect to, we don't have a finding by the district court with respect to prejudice that we can review.
I believe this court's review is de novo, and I agree that the court, in its opinion, did not specify specifically. It did say we had to respond to the motions. I think within the purview of responding to the motions, it would also encompass what the court did with those motions. But I understand the court's looking at the order and saying that the court merely said responding to two motions. The court mentioned attorney's fees. I believe in our papers we filed with the court, we did say those were fees expended on behalf of the hospitals. I didn't elaborate on those kinds of things because, to me, those are relevant, but I don't think they're determinative. We spent fees. I could see someone arguing that you're going to spend fees in arbitration. I could see where somebody could say, we took depositions, but you take depositions in arbitration. To me, the key point is that this court framed the case. This court ruled on the central issue in the case. They don't like it. That's why we're here.
But you don't disagree that there has to be a showing of actual prejudice. So if you could just articulate it for me.
And the actual prejudice, Your Honor, to me, the most prejudice a client could suffer in a case like this is the court's already ruled in our favor on these issues, essentially. The court had to make a choice. The court could have said it's these other hospitals' obligation to fund these payments, or the court could have said it's a health plan. The choice was given to the court. The court picked the health plan. That's the way our case is framed. We filed our motion for class certification after this ruling, framed exactly based upon the language court picked out of the contract. Our class certification before the court today is framed to just capture those people that have that language the court hung its hat on in the contract, period. We have framed the entire case based on that. I can tell you that my client thinks that they have a pretty good ruling right now in the case.
You don't think that the defendants would be bound by that ruling in arbitration?
You know, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that. I could see this. I could see us going to arbitration tomorrow. And in the arbitration, the hospital, who's in this case, they didn't argue the hospital had to pay the bills. They both argued we're not responsible. In the arbitration, I got two empty chairs. Okay, so if they can go to arbitration, argue to some arbitrator, it's not our obligation, it's the hospital's obligation, who this court already dismissed from the case, saying it did not have a contractual obligation to pay us. So I can't bring them into arbitration. I can get an arbitrator who says, you know what, I can give some deference, but I don't have to decide on what some district court said. All I know right now is I've got a really good case based on this order, and they know it too, and that's why we're here. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, because they wanted to be in federal court.
Well, I guess the argument is an arbitrator just needs to decide, not necessarily decide correctly, and they could simply decide who cares.
That's correct. They could ignore this. There's no appeal for me to say, arbitrator, you have to follow this. If you don't, you know. I know one thing. We got this ruling in December. We filed an amended complaint to get more plaintiffs to conform to this language. That's exactly when they moved to arbitrate.
I am completely sympathetic to your frustration. But in deciding this issue, we have a strong presumption,
yes,
in favor of arbitration. And as I read our case law, a requirement that we have to focus on the nature and extent of a party's pretrial activities in determining whether the opposing party suffered actual prejudice.
Absolutely.
And that, I get it, but to write something that captures that, what would we say?
You would say that by the defendant health plan purposely putting themselves into federal court when they knew there was an arbitration clause, because by the way, in their answer, they used that as an affirmative defense. So they knew it was there. They made a calculated gamble because they figured by being in federal court, they would get a good ruling from this judge.
Are we going to get to prejudice?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I believe this is part of the prejudice, that they actually put themselves in federal court and they got a ruling against them that is in my favor, which now by going to arbitration would jeopardize that ruling. The prejudice to me is that I may lose that ruling by going to arbitration. That's the prejudice. And I believe the Forrester case and the case in this circuit, in this district, or this circuit, support that. The prejudice can be the possibility that you lose a ruling.
But the problem, though, is, counsel, again, the theory of the whole idea is that you took them to court first, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And you knew that was an arbitration clause, didn't you?
I did not, Your Honor.
You didn't?
I mean, I did not.
You didn't know that was an arbitration agreement?
I did not focus on that part of the...
But it is there.
It's there, no question
therefore,
about it.
Therefore, counsel looking at it would have seen so.
Yes.
So you started this, as kids would say, you started this by yes. going to court. No, court.
A court, yes. A different court.
So when
yes.
you did so, anyone looking at Fourth Circuit precedent, you definitely want to be in federal court when it comes to determining whether or not an arbitration agreement is going to be enforced. We're very friendly to arbitration agreements by precedent.
Based upon the recent United States Supreme Court case, I would say probably in state court. But I agree with you. Yes.
Right,
yes.
So they're there. But again, as Judge Duncan has asked several times, don't we still have to look at what the prejudice is? And I know, one, you can't establish because you won. You're glad you won. But that hurts you in prejudice because there was no dispositive ruling against you, right?
That's right. It was in my favor. That's right.
The cost that was assessed looking at it was beyond just you. It was looking at all of the costs. So it's not particularized to you. So that would be...
I believe those costs were particularized to us in the motion filed with the court and the district court, yes.
Okay. All right.
And we went through depositions. We went through discovery. We went through all that. And that is some prejudice, but... Judge Duncan, the only thing I can articulate to Your Honor is the fact that there was a ruling that and I think the cases support this proposition that when a party puts themselves to a point where they get rulings in a case and those rulings don't go their way, that constitutes actual prejudice to a party opposing arbitration at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Lopez, you have a few minutes reserved.
And just briefly, Your Honors, a couple of things I wanted to respond to. As the court has noted, the hospitals filed in state court. They filed in state court without suing arguably the most proper party of all, the plan at issue here. Why they made that choice, I don't know, but they made that choice. And they filed in state court. Had they sued the plan, then they would have had to sue in federal court because it would have been it would have implicated ERISA. Another statement was made that the hospitals and I guess the other plaintiffs have not been paid. I want to just address that briefly. They have been paid. Not everything that they're owed, but they have been paid. And as this case has gone on, payments have come in, and the hospitals, the former defendants that have been dismissed, have funded those payments. Again, I mentioned that they were having financial difficulty. They're making those payments, they're just not making them on time, and they haven't made them all. And I believe they're still a couple months behind, but they are making those payments, and they continue to make those payments. And I think that's an important consideration also, particularly when you're evaluating the prejudice here and looking at why the health plan did what it did and when the health plan did.
How do you respond to Mr. Colantonio's argument that the prejudice in this case is a dispositive ruling entered by the court affirmatively indicating that your clients are obligated to pay something? I guess that may be in dispute, but are obligated to pay something. And now if we agree with you, you get the runoff to arbitration and have the risk of that arbitrator ignoring that ruling. Isn't that, that sounds pretty prejudicial to me.
Well, Judge Diaz, I think the other side is exaggerating the import of what the district court said. I mean, there's not a finding of liability against the health plan. There's not a directed verdict here. They didn't prevail on the merits. All that happened is the court found that they have made a prima facie case and they can proceed and we can proceed with our discovery. Again, keep in mind, the health plan has done no discovery. We've presented no evidence. All they have won is their ability to go ahead and proceed into discovery.
Well, counsel read this at page 432 of the joint appendix. The court says that your client's alternative motion must be denied, as it has a contractual obligation pursuant to this agreement to compensate the plaintiffs for services. That doesn't sound tentative or prima facie it sounds pretty definitive to me. And the question is, how is an arbitrator going to consider that ruling? Or does it have any obligation to consider it at all?
Well, I think, the other side, Mr. Colantonio is certainly has the ability to try and use anything that has happened in the court, the discovery, the depositions, any arguments that he's made to the court, and he's certainly within his rights to put that language in front of the arbitrator and ask the arbitrator to go ahead and consider it.
Then your best response, though, is that they got something they weren't entitled to anyway. That should have been done in arbitration. That's why we only look at prejudice, because you really shouldn't have gotten that. So why should just a windfall, really, you would talk about in terms of business?
No, that's right.
Right, that's why we look at whether or not it's something been ruled against you, and here it was not. The rest is for prejudice examination.
I believe those are all the issues I wanted to address. Are there any other questions that I can answer?
There are no further questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you.